Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I am your host, Shane Bacon, and it appears that golf is back. At least that's what people are telling me. Of course, we got Torrey Pines this week in the Waste Management, and then we got Riviera. So it's kind of back-to-back-to-back fun, exciting events. And since Torrey is here, I figured who better to talk to than Jeff Shackelford. Of course, a guy that lives in California, spends a lot of time on that coast, around those golf courses, knows every blade of grass that's moved year to year. And so had him on for a lengthy chat. I mean, we touched on Koepka versus Rory and Tiger Woods and the return and the golf course and the changes as we get set for the U.S. Open there next year at Torrey Pines. What kind of player might have some success this week considering the distance changes, how 17's been moved, some of the other holes there at Torrey South, and a lot more. It was a great discussion, fun discussion. Always love having Jeff Shackelford on. You're going to hear some background noise to start. That's Xander Schauffele's press conference in the background. This is what happens when you have guys on the grounds in the media center talking about the event that week. So you hear a little bit of Xander in the background. Shaq was great. He muted his phone at times, but that's what you're going to hear. It shouldn't affect the podcast at all. Honestly, I barely heard it as I was talking to him with my cans on. So hopefully it's not an issue, but I think you'll enjoy the conversation because Shaq's always great to have on. Stay till the end because we have a discussion about mixed events, changing possibly what the Olympics look like, especially if Tiger Woods isn't involved. I know we're a long ways away from the Olympics, and there's a lot more golf to talk about, but we just ventured into that world for a moment, and I just thought we had a fun conversation about some changes that could make certain events better and how much fun team events are every single time we have them, and how much fun team events are for us, for the average golfer, for the regular golfer that gets a chance to go out and play with a buddy or a member at a club that they get paired with or whatever. You play alternate shot or best ball, scramble, whatever you play, whatever format it is, it's just more fun to have a partner, more fun to have a teammate. So stay till the end because we talked a little bit about that and maybe some changes the President's Cup could have. And I just, I enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I thought there were some good points brought up. I think you'll enjoy it as well. Keep your eyes out on social media at Shane Bacon, on Instagram at Shane Bacon. I have a pre-qualifier for the Monday qualifier into the Waste Management on Thursday. So when you're listening to this, I'll probably already be out on the golf course at McCormick Ranch playing. I'm going to have my push cart with a seat on it. And always important, if you're going to do this and go as far old guy as I've gone, is you also got to purchase the seat cover. You've got to get the cushioned seat cover to go on top of the seat that's attached to your push cart. Just do it. Don't worry about what people are going to say. I had so many people. I posted my push cart on Instagram on Friday. I play in a Friday game at Dobson Ranch every week when I'm home. It's a great money game. There's some 100 players that play in it. And I posted a picture of my push cart with my seat on it. And I got so many people. What are you, 90? And you get all these people chattering on social media about it. You know what I don't? What doesn't bother me? You know what's never going to bother me? Is being comfortable, rested, and happy. And that's what my push cart does for me. We're best friends. We love each other. I believe it loves me. I sure love it. And you know what? If you make fun of me on social media, that's really your problem. That's your insecurities, not mine. I will sit on my seat when I can. I will take the load off whenever. And also, I'm going to rank real quick before we get to Shackford. I'm going to rank now as a 36-year-old man my three favorite ways to golf. And I'm not including caddy because caddy is the obvious answer. Anytime you have a caddy, it's the best. Caddy's off the board. Number one, push cart. It's the best. The push cart is the best. It's the best option out there. You don't have to carry the bag. You don't have one shoulder. I'm a one-shoulder carrier, so always one shoulder is a little more tired than the other. Push cart's number one. Carrying the bag is number two. And cart is three. I would say 2 years ago, those would have been completely flipped. I was a cart guy, a road, and now at the club I play at, and most of the time I'm out on the golf course, I'm carrying my bag. I couldn't even tell you the last time I've ridden in a cart, which is a surprise. Actually, I know what it was. It was media day, but that's okay. You're always in a cart on a media day. But I just love the push cart and then carrying the bag and then the golf cart. Those are my rankings. That's what you get here on the Clubhouse. Let's get to our guest. And we welcome back into the Clubhouse, one of my favorite people in all of golf, Jeff Shackelford, a Golf Channel contributor, of course, runs what I would say has withstood the test of time as the best golf website out there, jeffshackelford.com. And I'm not just saying that to perk you up, Jeff. I know you're at Torrey Pines. People can probably hear some of the announcements in the backgrounds, maybe some jets flying over as we chat. You are there throughout the week. I know you've talked a lot about the golf course and the changes. We'll get into that. But you're fresh off a Rory McIlroy press conference, and I want to start with this, and it's a little heavy-hitted, so let's go with it. I feel like 2020, the storyline that leads all storylines, even more than Tiger and what Tiger's going to do, and of course we continue to get pushed this is he going to win 83 storyline, is I feel like 2020 for golf fans and golf people alike is Brooks versus Rory. And I just wanted to ask to start, did Rory speak at all about Brooks Koepka and what's kind of gone on as their back and forth continues? And it's great entertainment for people like you and I, because when you're talking of the two best golfers right now, they sure seem like one and two, and the order can be debated.
Well, thank you for having me on that great introduction. I guess I don't disagree that they're likely to be the story, especially since Brooks seems that he's come back and shown that he's physically fit and ready to go, and there aren't any major issues with the knee. But, you know, then the rivalry word comes out, and right now there's no reason to call it that. They don't dislike each other in any significant way, and they don't play the same events enough for it to be a rivalry. But, yes, they're the two players you expect, and that's Xander Schauffele talking in the background. I hope it's not too loud. Rory didn't really even know he had a chance to take the number one spot this week. Now, whether that's a story about whether we inflate the rankings too much or not, I don't know. But he, I don't think he's that focused on Brooks or the number one thing. He's focused on each tournament he's playing in and just trying to win. And with a big picture goal, obviously, of the major championships. So I think it's a chance, but Tiger's looking awfully good, and it's hard to imagine that he isn't always the bigger story when he plays, because he's on form and he doesn't play that often, so we're eager to know what he's doing when he does play.
Yeah, it's interesting with the Tiger thing. You know, he's making his first start this week, and we'll get into Tiger, you know, 2020, already a winner in this wraparound season that seems to never end, and I love the fact that he took a long time away from the golf course. But just going back to Rory and Koepka for a moment, you know, golf and sports, when they're at their best, have rivalries. And they have players, teams, whatever you want to call it, that aren't big fans of each other. And you said it earlier, it's not like these two guys don't like each other. They're fine with each other. I think they respect each other. But the thing that I feel like we have brewing is we have these two young guys that have ungodly talent. They both hit the ball forever. They have different looks to it, but basically means to an end are very, very similar. It's been a long time since Rory won a major. Koepka has been really just dominant in the majors throughout his career the last few years. I feel like as we get going this week, you know, into the Masters and the Players and the U.S. Open and the PGA on down the line, there's a chance for this to set up to actually be something. And when you think about rivalries that we've had the last 15, 20, 30 years, you know, you could circle Phil Tiger, but it wasn't really a rivalry. I mean, Phil and Tiger,
no.
At times, you know, early on, Tiger just beat his brains in. And then lately, it's been Phil that's actually taken Tiger to task when they've been paired together. But we never really got, you know, Tiger Phil playing great golf at insert U.S. Open golf course. And I'm hoping, at least, maybe it's just me hoping for this to happen, but these two guys had years that were great. They were 1-2 in voting for player of the year, however you want to dissect that. And we're going into a season where Rory has looked as good as he's looked since he was playing so well in 2014. And Koepka's Koepka, and he's a guy that seems to bring it at the big stages. So I just wonder, as we get going with the Rory season this year right now in California, there's a chance that this can continue on. And that, to me, is the best case scenario for golf moving forward in terms of storylines, even over Tiger, because as we all know, Tiger is in his mid-40s, and him winning stuff's great, and it's going to bring eyeballs to the sport, but it's not going to stay there forever.
No, it definitely is not. And yes, I think to your point, I would look more to Florida for this to start to perk up. I don't have a great feeling for Brooks on Polar Greens in the West Coast, although he nearly won at Pebble Beach, but He is going to play Riviera, which is incredible. We're going to have the top five players in the world there. Hopefully the weather cooperates. But I think it's in Florida in the run-up to the Masters where it could get interesting. It's just whether Brooks can rise to the level he does at major championships in those regular tour events. I think it is something, it's probably a goal of his, because it is so bizarre. We're just not used to a player doing what he does, which is to just sort of play and then suddenly take it up multiple notches at a major. It's usually the other way around, and Rory was a little bit guilty of that at a few times last year. Great everywhere but the major championships. So, but to your point, I do think it would be wonderful. We have such a, you know, the way the game's played now with the equipment and all the things going on, the power game, the number of people, the wisdom that they are fed, it just has made it, it's neutralized things so much. And to me, not a great way, in the sense that the elite players are having a harder time separating themselves and dominating. And those two have still managed to do it in spite of the factors. So the sport desperately needs just some continuity there in terms of star power. And that's my nice way of saying, not a rivalry, but just some consistency and seeing some people atop some leaderboards who are both trying to beat each other. And it would be a lot of fun. And I think there, although a lot of people, I think the other component to this is that there is a Brooks could be kind of the villain to Rory's nice guy. And I think that helps. Maybe that's why people keep looking at these two, besides obviously what they've done on the golf course. I, as a media person, of course, love Brooks because he provides us one-liners and he surprises you. In fact, you really have to listen closely to his press conferences because he can so lull you to sleep with that monotone. You just think he's just not there. And then, you know, you go back and you read the copy, and Adam Scott is just only the opposite. He's just says really profound things, but he says them slowly and carefully, and he doesn't say like and you know a million times. And you go, oh, wow, that was really fantastic. And Brooks is just more the monotone. Throws you off, but then he throws these zingers and he has no fear of getting into it with other guys who he's kind of annoyed by. And I love that. I mean, we need that. The people who don't like him, I go, well, I get, you know, he's got an edge to him. He's not your favorite, but it's just nice to have variety and a variety of styles and personalities. And then Rory's just getting more and more likable. He's so bright. He's well-read. I mean, his press conference today just gave so much insight. None of that edge of, like, I don't want to reveal my secrets and my team. He's changed so much in that sense. You know, he used to kind of dream of being sort of the proper star and then having the proper car to pull up in and the vanity weightlifting. And he's just gone so the other direction now, and basically all those categories.
Yeah, is he the most unique?
Makes him fun to follow.
Yeah, is Rory the most unique player? And I'm going to say player in, I know you are going to kind of associate that with a great player. I mean, a guy that we want to talk to, a guy that we want to ask questions to, and a guy we want to listen to talk. Is he the most unique player in this sport that you've heard just speak in your years of covering golf?
Probably in that he is the most open, and he always has been, and he's gotten in trouble at times, which he's admitted, or he's felt like he said too much. And yet it hasn't really changed him. Whereas, for instance, Spieth, obviously he's struggling a little with his game, so he's not in the greatest mood to talk to about his game, but he is somebody who's now making an effort to really give away less because he just – somebody told him he said too much, which I don't know who did. It's disappointing because I can listen to Spieth when he just kind of goes deep on geeky golf stuff all day long and really enjoy it, and he doesn't get enough chances to do that. Rory, he's just very genuine, and even though he's gone through these things, it's not only not changed him, if it has changed him, it's changed him for the better. He just sort of he's what you see up in these press conferences and interviews, and there's just no guard, there's no BS, and you know, Tiger still has a little bit of a guard up, and it's wonderful. obviously, and why he's beloved by the British press and by us over here and by fans, and because fans recognize these things. And I don't think we give enough credit for the things they recognize. And it's the one thing that if we ever could get time with the players to explain to them that, you know, people really notice this stuff, and they just put such a guard up now discussing their games, and it makes them so much less interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know if they realize that, but they get that, I think, from their agents who just tell them, everybody's out to get you, and I'm here to protect you, and then it leads to this, you know, this kind of attitude they have.
Yeah, you really missed an opportunity there to just answer, no, Bryson is the most interesting that you've had a chance to cover. You had a chance there to just throw Bryson out there for everybody to dive into.
Oh, well, yeah, but an interview with him is really a struggle. I mean, I got a good look at the work he's done on his back, because at the Bahamas, that was the only, as after his round, we were trying to interview him about something very, very, very lame. The new Puma shirts that they were wearing, they had the collection with the turtle thing, and we were trying to, you know, keep it light. And then he did not stop. So we followed him to the parking lot. So I got a good look at the back. The back muscles were very, you know, protruding-ish, but never really got to stop him to actually have a conversation. So I love him. I think he's great for the sport and fascinating, and so nice to have a variety of people and their views and be a little kooky. But he's increasingly tough to pin down for 20 seconds, and it's too bad because he is interesting.
Yeah, you just can ask him virtually any. I've decided he's like a young Gary Player in terms of just asking him a question and then they can just kind of take it wherever they want. I feel like that's what you get with DeChambeau. It's, hey, what do you think about the Astros? And let's just see where he goes.
Yeah.
You know, and you know what? He even if he doesn't have a take, he's going to make one up, which I appreciate. And it might not even make any sense, but I appreciate where he goes with it.
Yeah, and even, well, most of the best ones will do that. And I, you know, we did that. Yeah, we had Justin Rose here yesterday, and I threw a question out. He didn't quite answer it, but what he gave was kind of something he wanted to talk about. He kind of wanted to let it be known that Sean Foley has ditched, and I got to go find him this afternoon. He was too busy teaching yesterday, but Sean Foley's ditched the track, man. And Justin and Sean have been exchanging iPhone videos of his swing. So it was kind of fascinating to, again, a geeky world where these guys now all travel with a track, man. And then here's the guy who was really one of the first instructors to swear by that thing. And one of the first players to literally send numbers. And I remember interviewing them about that. They just used to email numbers. Well, now they're back to looking at swings visually and trying to find a place where they thought Justin was best. And he kind of wanted to share that. It didn't really have much to do with the question I asked, but it was fantastic. So, and I don't take that personally when guys do that. A lot of the times you throw a question out just to let them get whatever it is off their chest. That at least sounds like you're trying to do your job as opposed to just saying, Rory, so what do you want to talk to us about today?
Rory, talk about your week. It's the best.
Yeah, well, that's my least favorite way to start a question, which you hear all the time, and I'm sure you're in your television work, you get screamed at for doing so, but talk about – either talk about or starting a question with how is puts people in a tough spot to give up. You know, how great are you? How magnificent are you today after shooting 54? What are they going to say? Tough thing to answer without sounding like a jerk.
So this golf course, you are a guy that knows a lot about architecture and building golf courses and changing golf courses. This is a golf course that feels like it's ever-changing. And I talked this week, I've talked to a couple of PGA Tour players. They're saying that the back nine now, is it close to 4,000 yards, just the back nine alone? I mean, this is sea level, Jeff. This is going to be forever.
You know, it's a good question. The scorecard we have out in the media center is the old one. So I have not seen the new, but 17 just got a little bit longer and a lot tougher. And they added a couple more tees on the back nine. So, yeah, I could see 4,000. And there's we had a little bit of rain on Monday night. It was actually a really nice firmness on Monday afternoon when I walked around. And And that just took a little bit of a roll out of the place. Not that there was, the ball was going to be running much anyway, but yeah, it's a beast. The fourth hole is tougher. You know, the big change this year is the 17th hole really gets the canyon in play finally. It's not out of bounds down the left. Most of my life it was lost. It was not marked as a penalty area or hazard. And so that's a great change on that tee shot. But it still is it's hard to look at. And the old green complexes weren't masterpieces, but every one of them was just a little bit different. Had cool little elements, you know, a little bump here with a pin behind the bump, and all that got wiped out. And basically every green's bunker left, bunker right, and a circle with a tier in the middle. And it's not very architecturally sophisticated.
Is it going to be something in terms of scoring this week you feel like is going to be, considering the rain you said and how it's a little bit wetter, I know it's longer, I mean, are you going to expect to see what you always see? Is it going to be a lot tougher than you think? Because, you know, they're obviously getting ready for this U.S. Open. The golf course is going to host a U.S. Open for the first time since one of the best U.S. Opens of all time was at Torrey Pines. So do you feel like we're going to get a chance to kind of see what it'll play like at a U.S. Open, or is there just not going to be the firmness that you're going to expect to see when you get to summertime in that area?
Yeah, no, it plays a lot shorter in the U.S. Open. It was amazing in 2008, even from May to June, how much it firmed up, and that was with a lot more marine layer. They haven't had nearly the marine layer here. And that's one of the reasons they've had so much trouble with the trees. They just haven't had it in the last decade. But it is playing much longer right now. The mornings are very cold. The greens are beautiful, but they did kind of go from a nice firmness to still firm, but you just, it's hard to get people to comprehend how hard greens have to be to make the ball of the modern tour professional bounce and then roll out. They just, you know, they did the combination of the height they hit it, the spin they put on it, everything they dial in, and the freshness of their grooves essentially most of the time. I mean, I've seen some greens in the last few years that I walked out on and they're shiny and you just think, oh my God, this thing's a brick. And yet, you know, and then you look at the Twitter and people are going, oh, it's pincushion greens. Wow. I don't know how to tell you this. They're just really firm. So their ability to do that just makes any course gettable. If there's any hold at all, they're just incredible. And the polo will, you know, scare a few guys off. But I expect good scoring because the weather's supposed to be good. And as usual now, Torrey Pines, not much wind, cold mornings, beautiful days, it looks like, all week. So I don't remember what Justin finished last year. I feel like it was 15 under, but I don't exactly recall. It was an astounding performance by him last year, because we thought the same thing last year. The place was playing. Oh, he was 19 under. Excuse me. 21 under. Adam Scott was 19, and Adam played unbelievably. And they separated themselves so unbelievably. I don't believe Adam's here.
21 under, and then it was 10 under and 18 when Jason Day won in the playoff. And we've seen, I mean, you go back to 16 when Snedeker won, and it was minus six. That was obviously in that brutal windy Sunday when he fired that unbelievable final round. Tiger, we haven't talked about Tiger, which, you know, is, what are we, 20 minutes in and not discussing Tiger and his first start in 2020. I talked a little about this break, and he's saying he really only touched his clubs once, you know, basically after the President's Cup. I mean, I know it's the word break, you know, it's subjective at this point because most sports have 5 months, and, you know, a break for these guys is 1 month or 3 weeks. But still, I think you and I both agree, anytime Tiger takes a little bit of time off, it's a good thing. I mean, you know, we'd probably prefer him to only play in about six events a year, you and I would, because that would make him as fresh as humanly possible for the ones that actually matter in terms of what he's doing for his career. But Tiger's at a place, you know, he loves that he plays well at and he's won at before. We saw a refreshed Tiger late last season. What are you expecting? I don't want to say this year for Tiger, because how the heck do you know? But this week at a golf course that, you know, it's going to play long no matter who you are, and it's going to play tough, and it's going to be cold. All of those things have seemed to be negatives to Tiger over the last few years. What do you expect from Tiger coming into this week? And also, a second question to this is, Tiger's a guy that's always said, I'm only teeing it up to win. Is that still kind of the mindset you feel from Tiger as he prepares for this week in particular?
Yeah, I do. You know, yesterday we had a press conference with him, and he was half awake. and it was just not a great session. It was just kind of flat. He said what he needed to say. We have kind of a new dynamic in the room here. So just, you know, it's joined with all the actual desks and things. So you just never quite know. Today in the Pro-Am, he looks sensational. I don't know if he's quite got the new driver. He's trying to work the new TaylorMade driver in. I don't think it's quite dialed in. He ended up not playing yesterday. He's hit two buckets of balls trying to get it right. So it looks to me like that's his focus, is trying to get it the way he wants it. But he's moving well. He looks it's lean. The thing you notice, we were looking at today, maybe it's because Bryson's gotten so ridiculous, but Rory and Tiger now have really leaned down. They're not that they've lost a lot of muscle. They just have kind of shifted their bodies back to a place that I think is better in terms of all the everything, flexibility, getting warmed up easier, reducing injury. So I expect him to have a very good week. My question to him in the press conference, and I should have asked it in two parts, because I was trying to get at, as you've gotten older, when you take a little bit of time off, what's the slowest thing to come back? And he said it was essentially the competitive not necessarily the fire, but sort of some balance between getting revved up and getting, not trying too hard to get in a competitive mode. There's a place he finds that would be really fascinating to hear him go much deeper on that, not in front of the cameras rolling, where he could kind of flesh it out. But it was the start of an interesting answer, that there is some place where he needs to find kind of a middle ground. And he said some weeks it just hasn't come, and he suddenly, there you go, he misses a cut. Of course, that's happened, like, you can count that on two hands. But I feel like he's, when he shows up now, he's going to be somebody, he's just not going to do these events where he's just getting reps to get reps. He's there to play well, and he enjoys playing well in front of big crowds, and they're going to have good crowds this weekend. So I think that's really what gives him the thrill at this point. And he's gotten to appreciate that when he lost that. And I just don't think people also understand how much more fun golf is for him again, because he's not hitting the driver all over the place. I mean, we're talking about, he doesn't have the driver dialed in, but, you know, he's keeping it in play, you know, just missing a fairway. We're not, you know, he's not hitting it into the Hilton right, off 18, anything like that. So
yeah,
it makes life more fun. You know, the game's better. The iron play is ridiculous. The short game is, you know, he was putting in a little extra time on the short game today, just trying to get that dialed. And that looked great. So he you know, in the Pro-Am's a circus, and there's people everywhere, and he was playing with Kelly James today, who he clearly likes, but I mean, it was a mess. There's people everywhere, golf TV, but it this doesn't bother him, you know. And I think in the past he would have been like, you know, with a security guy, like, what is this? And I wouldn't blame him, by the way, but he's just got a nice, relaxed vibe about him.
Yeah, it's interesting you say, it's a great question you asked him, but it's interesting you say that his answer was, you know, the competitive, maybe mindset, if you will, that he has to get back into. It was the thing, when you go back and rewatch the Masters from last year, his focus on Sunday, and you just watch the shots of his face and him reading putts and walking to the hole after iron shots and even off tees, it was basically the same face all day long. The reaction never changed. I mean, he never got up. He never got down. It was like he was in a business mode that you see the elite athletes find occasionally. And it's interesting to hear him say, it takes me a while to find that, but that's not crazy to hear, even from a guy as successful as Tiger, because I'm sure it does take a little bit of time. I felt like in singles, at the President's Cup, he was a little bit in that mindset where it seemed after about the first tee, like, this is Tiger's to win. You know, I mean, he's not going to lose this match no matter who you put up against him. And I would love to hear and he'd never give us this, but I'd love to hear honestly when he says, you know what? It clicked. I found it. Is it a Wednesday? Is it a Friday? Is it Riviera Sunday? You know, when is it going to happen for him that thing clicks on? And when it does, will we see it? Will his body be able to take him throughout the year with that mindset where it needs to be?
I think he'll mention it if you read his words carefully. He usually does when he's won a tournament. He'll kind of mention some shot where he something kind of clicked and then he kind of went on cruise control from there, or he just felt good from there. I just expected it to be. I didn't expect that to be the answer, but in hindsight, he has kind of touched on this before. I think most of the time, though, we've always read it as it's more of a I have no competitive fire, and that shot got me going and hearing the crowd, and I figured something out. It's more of the answer he gave yesterday was more of actually finding a balance of pumped up and the adrenaline going, and but controlled and not forcing things, and so that was interesting. And then after all these years, that's still the thing. Well, it's got to be pretty cool for him. And I guess that would have been where I was trying to get with the follow-up was, you know, with experience, what is it now that you know versus 20 years ago that is that thing you need to find? And I guess he was answering that that way. But that's got to be a pretty neat thing to be able to recognize and get. It's just got to give you even more confidence knowing that that's the thing that you have to find, not the first tee shot or any number of weird, you know, my short game or
right,
whatever it is. That's got to make you feel awfully good that you know if you find that one thing all systems go. That's got to be a pretty, and that's probably why he's won 82 tournaments on the PGA Tour and 15 majors, and will probably win more. I don't know this year. I mean, obviously Augusta's great for him, and I think Harding Park will be great because it's Poa, and even though he hates Poa, he's grown up on it. He knows it. That's going to be a good place for him. Wingfoot should be sensational for him. The way he's hitting his irons, and to me, I think you've been there recently. You can tell me, but I mean, to me, it's about everything. There is about iron play. You know, everybody focuses on the rough and then the hitting fairways and U.S. Open, blah blah blah. To me, Wingfoot's about being missing in the right places all day long in the U.S. Open, and then Royal St. George's is just anything can happen there. It's kind of weird. It's a weird place.
Is there?
But this is. You just get a lot of weird bounces there, and there's a lot more chance on that length than all the others, I think.
Has there been a buzzword from the players these first few weeks? And of course, you're getting a lot more players there this week in California, Torrey. It seems like every season we get something that all the players are gravitating towards. Is there anything that you've seen or heard or noticing from players that they're doing in 2020 already that you might have an inside track on that's going to be the thing this year for the players?
Well, I just after the last 2 days, I was not looking for this, but I'm going to be kind of looking and seeing if there's been a realization that there's been way too, and I don't necessarily buy this. I think TrackMan's amazing and launch monitors are amazing, but I just on kind of seeing what Rory's doing, what he talked about, what Rose talked about. Looking at the range yesterday, I was shocked how few TrackMan were out. There were still seven or eight. But I'm wondering if guys are, you know, I just my numbers and my numbers this, and I sent my numbers to my guy, and we looked at my numbers. I kind of wondering if we've hit a peak on people obsessing about their TrackMan numbers. Because one of the things I've been asking a lot about is this speed concept, because I'm mostly bothered by it I could care less if Bryson Sale wants to get more speed and hit it longer. But good for them if that's what they want to do. The game still has to be played a lot of different ways. What worries me are these weird little anecdotes you hear about, college coaches say, hey, send me your kids' numbers, or I need to see all, constantly see the numbers and make sure he does a combine once a month, with a checkup. And I want to monitor them, that kind of stuff. Or parents thinking their kid's not going to be tall enough to generate enough speed. Those trends to me are just awful for golf. So I've been kind of looking at that and compiling quotes possibly to write something. So this was a little bit of a, and again, it's 1 week, we'll see, but I'm intrigued to see if maybe we've hit a peak on that. And there's a little more interest in a few other, Sean Martin's been asking about 3D in these press conferences for a story, and that's in the transcripts. It's kind of interesting. So there may be some, TrackMan is not going away, and launch monitors aren't going away, but there may be a realization that some of us have gotten a little carried away with those numbers out here. That's my first impression, but it's only Wednesday.
Yeah, and you already touched on this. One thing that I'll be interested to see throughout the season is, and you talked to Rory and Tiger, is that whole bulking up and now bulking down. And it feels a little, when you look at some of these guys, it feels a little like what we went through at the NBA. I mean, when you think about LeBron when he came into the league and maybe 4, 5, 6 years into him being with the Cavs, he was huge.
Yeah.
I mean, he was enormous in terms of muscle, and he was probably in that 275, 280 weight range for his size and his ability to move. And while he's still obviously he's not weak by any stretch of the imagination, you do see a different looking. Right. His body type is a little bit more for longevity and staying on the court for 48 minutes and playing, well into the playoffs and all of that. And he's probably shed, I'd say probably 50, I don't know the number, but let's just call it 15, 20 pounds of that peak weight he was in. I feel like you see a little of that with Tiger. I definitely see that with Rory, and it'll be interesting to see if this is a little bit of where we're going. Why are we worried about bulking up when flexibility is where we're kind of creating that speed?
Well, I think that's why the Bryson thing is so fascinating, because you've seen – some people reach that peak and now they're kind of throttling back. I only saw one guy yesterday who I just went, whoa, geez, that's a big boy. I think it's Will Gordon. His photo on the tour site doesn't look like he's a big guy. Anyway, 6'3", and he had some guns. But everybody, I'm not seeing a whole lot of that. And I do wonder if that the people around these guys and the ones they look to for insight have kind of picked up on the Rory and Tiger leaner look, and Dwight Howard, to your NBA analogies, kind of gone that way. Part of it's age, but part of it's a new way to try to deal with his propensity for injuries. And we hit the peak in 2007 with Tiger, and then Rory kind of followed suit, and they don't get asked about that enough. But and Tiger will, of course, revert to gym talk, and he won't let on that he's leaned down intentionally too much, because he likes to act. He likes to talk gym talk, I did a prediction thing. One of the things I'm looking for this year is that first load management reference. Certain guys still like to talk that talk, that to let you know they're real jocks, but. Hopefully we never hear that term. Golf.
We need to set Vegas odds on the players that'll say that first. I'm gonna guess that.
Well, Brooks.
Yeah, I was gonna say Kep could probably be like minus 250. You'd have Tiger in there as well. I'm gonna assume Bryson might want to throw it in there early. He might be a big.
I feel like load management's like preschool kind of terminology to Bryson. It's like that's just so beneath him. That's so 2 years ago. I think DJ would be an outside shot in that, just kind of picking it up because he likes sports and watching it. But and with the schedule this year, there is going to be, and we had a lot of that already in these press conferences, which is brutal, schedule talk. I mean, there's just nothing more painful. But it's a big issue this year. They have just so many good tournaments to choose from. And then they have the Olympics, and so much is jammed in this one little space and of time, it seems like. So there's going to be that. The turn will happen because somebody's just going to wheel it out to justify their skipping Memphis or whatever it is.
Maybe Xander just said it when you were sitting there. Maybe you missed the first load management of the year. He might have yelled it during the presser.
I will run a search on his press conference, although he would not be the guy that I would take for that. He just doesn't feel well. And by the way, he is still here, hanging around. The other guys in these press conferences literally darted quickly, and he's hanging around. But he's a local guy, so it's great. He's putting in his time here, and he's obviously one of the players that just has so much game, and it's just fun to watch. It's just fun how fans just are drawn to guys like him who have they bring a certain intensity every round they play, and I love that people recognize that in someone like him.
Now, I know you can be a bit of a curmudgeon at times, and don't take that offense. No, I feel like
please.
I feel like you embrace the word at times, but I want to say I want to say
sure.
It to about 2020 is it feels like this is a really exciting year for this sport in particular. I mean, you've got Tiger already winning and playing well at the President's Cup, and Tiger's always going to be a story no matter if he shoots 65 or 85. I've already talked a little bit about Koepka and Rory. JT is kind of lurking, and it's not going to make national headlines until he wins again, but he's already had an incredible season. You already mentioned Xander is kind of the guy all the golf people look at as the next big thing. DJ's, again, another player that isn't talked about maybe as much as he should be, and these are just some of the players, not to mention a lot of the other storylines, including stuff like Phil, you know, who is obsessed with hitting the ball forever, and the results aren't there, and Jordan Spieth is looking for his first win since the Open, and there just seems like there's a lot to talk about in terms of golf, and we're just getting going this year. Do you feel like that? Does that feel like when you're at these events that it's an exciting time for the sport?
This week is, obviously, it's really the first big event of the year, and then the West Coast just from now on is, to me, it's just sensational because it's the variety each week is incredible, going from Phoenix to Pebble to Riviera to Mexico City, all that. Just different courses, and you get great fields, and the weather's a factor, and it's beautiful places to look at when the sun's out, and it just gets you going. And then Florida is just great now because it's all in one nice package with the Players back and the run-up to the Masters. And so to me, this is the best time, and we'll find out where everybody's kind of at, and it all happens kind of fast. I guess that would be I'm sort of torn. I like the new schedule that it's all in one little a tighter window, because I think last year with the President's Cup in December, it just stretched out and people kind of got burned out on and needed a break on golf, and it never really quite happened. And of course, President's Cup was great viewing, so that made us forget that the wraparound, the year-round thing can get a little bit tedious. So it seems like the ingredients are there for an incredible year. I don't really have any reason to think it won't be. Royal St. George's is probably the only little bit of a downer to me, in that it's just can be very bizarre. It's a great course, really neat place, but it's goofy. And then I don't know what the Olympics do. I do worry that the guys just get tired of talking about the Olympics. I mean, I could already feel it in the questions yesterday. It's just not there yet, and in terms of being that special to him, and I don't know if it ever will be, and I can't get off the fact that the format misses the opportunity for real team golf. And I was out on the course just to go on the team golf thing, but I'm really going to be fascinated to see. I mean, we already know it. Team golf's really, outside of the majors, the best thing we have. It just brings out drama, emotions. It's just so fun to watch match play. And there's some young kids out, and I follow one of them on Instagram. He's got the greatest swing you've ever seen, and we showed it one time on Morning Drive, and his dad warned me they were coming out, and and they play the junior PGA Junior League. And I asked them, I said, so do you guys like playing for yourself more, or do you like playing for the team more? And they all said the team. And I wonder, you know, with the PGA Junior League, and it's going to take a while, but I could see a day where team golf is something that players are more passionate about, and we see something like World Team Tennis have with team stuff, and that the Olympics missed that, or that we didn't create a portion of the schedule in golf. And I say we had no say in this. I wonder if that's something where we're just so badly missing it as a sport and not capitalizing on this, and then also seeing where a kind of a younger generation is gravitating towards. And the Olympics will raise that point again, and we'll all write articles about all different formats, and they'll go out of their way to tell us why none of those things work, and that the IOC doesn't have enough beds, and yada, yada, yada. If Tiger doesn't make the Olympics, then everything will be on the table, because it'll be no one will care. So that's the only good news if he misses it.
So,
because they may have to actually consider these things.
So, you know, your point on the team thing is interesting. I brought this up around the President's Cup. I think I might have written it on Twitter or somewhere that nobody really cares about. But it was about the way that these team events are formatted. And the Ryder Cup doesn't need to be changed. The Ryder Cup is perfect. Everybody loves the Ryder Cup.
No.
It's compact and it's beautiful and it's brings out true rivalries and everybody's excited and they want to win. So don't touch the Ryder Cup. But of course, there's plenty of things you could do to the President's Cup to make it more interesting. The one thing I said that doesn't really need to, even though I'd love to see, you know, the LPGA and women's golf involved in a mixed gender team event that I think would be really special to watch for golf, and
so
it'd be
good.
Lovely, and everybody would be excited about it. Plus, I think it would even the playing field a little bit in terms of what the President's Cup is. But what I think would be really cool that the President's Cup could do, and it's to your point about team events, I would say that the drag, if there is a drag about these Ryder Cups and President's Cups, is you get this unbelievable team dynamic for 2 or 3 days, depending on which event it is, and then it goes to singles on Sunday. And while the singles is great, and you get to see Rory battling Patrick Reed, and you get to see Ricky out there winning the last four holes in hopes of maybe triumphing in this Ryder Cup, and you get to see Graham McDowell win it, I feel like the President's Cup could throw some sort of a team aspect where everybody has to play on Sunday, and you still get that playing alongside someone on your team in pivotal moments, pivotal matches that are going to actually decide the President's Cup. And I got a chance. I played our country club here, Phoenix Country Club, has a pros cup that we did a couple of weeks ago. And it's basically a Ryder Cup style format. It's 10 players versus 10 players. And you do the first day's alternate shot, and then it's best ball, and then it's singles. And those first 2 days are so much more fun than the singles, you know, and you're out there with a buddy. Maybe you don't even know him, and you get to know him, and you get to be pals with him, and you're playing alternate shot, or you're playing best ball. And it's so much fun, and it's so much different than your regular, let's go out and play and see what we shoot type of golf, that I feel like if the recreational golfer, the amateur golfer, the professional golfer, and the elite professional golfer all agree on something, it seems like an easy thing to change. And I think if you really polled people, you'd get a 90 percentile type of vote that team golf's more fun than singles.
And that's interesting. You know, it'd be great to start off with singles, get it out of the way, and you're right, finish with you know, either true alternate shot or four ball. And of course, the Olympics would have been such a great place for it. Just in some modified version, smaller teams, men and women. I mean, there's just so many ways you could do it. It's frustrating that, and now we're at the point where the people who actually care about it don't even want to throw out ideas,
right?
Because generally, the people in charge in golf go out of their way. I mean, I'm convinced that the Tour Championship format of starting at 10 under was the only thing that no writer ever wrote about as a possible way to conclude it. And that's why they went with it. I mean, I really think they went out of their way to not.
They scoured the internet. Everybody look up on Google if this has been applied by anybody.
Jeez. It's like a giant whiteboard of all the ideas and who came up with them. And it's almost hard to want to put some kind of concept out there where you combine the men and women, how many players, because you do have to, there are a lot of things you have to think about. The teams have to be a certain size. You don't want them too big because you want a lot of countries to be able to participate. Yeah, there are all these components, but it's not that complicated. It's just, but they just come up with the excuses of beds and it's not medals. It's not medals. The Olympic, the IOC loves to give out medals. They just have a thing about beds. And of course that's all ludicrous because all the players in Rio, other than Ricky and a few others, stayed in private housing, and they certainly will do that at Versailles and Japan and right. Pacific Palisades in 2028. So anyway, it's just a thing, and it's so disappointing because it is important that golf be great in the Olympics, and then again, you know, and there's a jet flying over in case you couldn't tell. The and then the other lunatic proposal that always gets laughed at, and I've thrown it out multiple times, and I don't care. I'm going to keep throwing it out. Long drive is more of an Olympic sport than stroke play or team golf. Those are athletes. There's a timing to it. There's an athleticism to it. There's a training element to it. I think it would be an enormous hit. And you can take it to exotic things like they did at Las Vegas Speedway. It's tricky because you need the landing area to be right. But it's one where, again, the closed-mindedness toward that has been so disappointing because it would help regular golf. If long drive was in the Olympics, I think it'd be like beach volleyball has done for volleyball. But they just, that it's not a PGA Tour property, and they have a lot of the say in the European Tour and the World Golf Federation. I don't even remember which one that one is. It's the IGF, excuse me, International Golf Federation. They have the World Golf Foundation and the International Golf Federation. Don't tell me what each one does. But
you know what? You could just throw out letters, and it's probably going to be some sort of an organization that's combined. Involved and, itself at this point.
Yeah. So they're the ones who decided, those people, and deal with the IOC, which isn't fun either, and I empathize with them. But and then they have to go to the players, and then the players, you know, shaped this format originally too. And the IOC wants to see a tournament played a championship decided similar to the one that is in the Olympics. But that's easy to do. That's easy to craft, I would hope. So anyway, it's something that that to me is the one sort of, and it's not a big deal, but it is sort of the one thing that will always linger through the season. Because the players just get asked so much about the Olympics, we've already started. And obviously Justin Rose being here was, and Rory, it's always a weird topic. So it's going to keep coming up through the year. And for the most part, most people just in golf don't care. They want to hear about the run up to the Masters and the majors.
I just was laughing internally at the thought of Tiger sleeping on one of those recyclable cardboard beds in Japan. I just, hey Tiger, this is your room here. You're rooming with this track and field star. This is your bed. They actually you can just recycle it, and the medal you're going to win is also recyclable. I mean, I think you and I both love the idea of a recyclable bed. I laugh at the idea of Tiger Woods using the recyclable bed.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see the feedback on those. So since an athlete getting rest, then again, they convert dorms all the time for Olympic villages, so you never know what they're getting. I mean, I would hope the great athletes demand a certain kind of bed, but yeah, recycled cardboard, that was an odd one to hear about. Again, not one golfer will be in that. The golf course is so far from the athlete housing. It'll be... If they do stay in the village, it's literally to do it for a couple nights and to take it in briefly, kind of like the amateurs now in the crow's nest, which is there's two great mysteries to me. One, why some amateur hasn't said, screw it, I'm staying there all week. You guys all leave and I'll have the place to myself.
Exactly.
Because they all do one night. I don't understand. They do one night and they leave. You have one chance in your life to stay in the crow's nest. During the Masters, you're kidding me. You really need to go stay in a house with your family. It's just nuts. And then, of course, the other thing is to get another rant off my chest. Possibly the favorite in the Augusta National Women's Amateur choosing to play in the ANA Inspiration. You likely have one chance in your life to be a favorite to win a golf tournament at Augusta National. You really need to plan that. I really can't believe that. Anyway,
I could read your tone as I was going through that post on your website about Gabriella Ruffles, and your tone, and you said deciding to play in one of the five majors, and I read one of the five majors, and I was just kind of going, I mean, I understand your point here. It's a fairly special event to get a chance to play at Augusta, but you know, listen, everybody's got to make the decisions that they want to make, and a lot of the decisions we make in our lives, we look back on 5 years later and regret. Maybe that'll be
and
one of those.
Exactly. No, and it's my disdain is aimed more at the people around the players, because we just see it so many times where they get led toward bad decisions that are so obviously not good ones. And it's frustrating to see, because when it is one of these opportunities, plus, I selfishly wanted to see her there because I want that tournament to succeed. And last year was an amazing success. But now, you know, all these, so many kids turning pro, and over the five best female college players all turn pro over the holidays. It's bizarre. It's bizarre. And then this, despite the women who went last year having exactly what you hope, the experience of a lifetime. So they have an example and they still ignore it. It's bizarre. And the Crow's Nest one, I mean, that one, I'm sure you've gotten Curtis going or somebody, one of the former great amateurs that got to experience that. They just shake their head.
Well, I don't want to dive into it.
No, I'm sorry. I'm going down a rabbit hole.
I'm more saying.
You want me to be a curmudgeon?
No, I appreciate it. I would say it's more. And again, this isn't railing on the youth. It's just kind of how we are. I'm more like this now than I used to be. It's, you know, we're a little bit more in our own worlds. And our worlds tend to be focused in and around whatever device we have in our hands. And sitting around with strangers playing cards at night, I don't think sounds like something a 19-year-old's going to be interested in doing. Even if 25 years later they went, man, I could have stayed at Augusta National for a whole week. And I decided to stay at the Hampton Inn.
Yeah, right, with the family. Yeah, and I get that too, by the way. I'm a creature of habit. We all are. And when you're a competitive athlete, I get it. You want to do your stuff, your routine. You want to put your stuff everywhere and not worry about being in a bunk bed and all that. But it's Augusta. You're not going to be uncomfortable. You might need to bring earplugs in case somebody else in the Crow's Nest snores. But like I said, they all leave after one night. So one of these guys eventually is going to get smart and go, I'm staying the week, and I've got it to myself. I get to go down in the clubhouse at night. Look at stuff, and the guys who've done it, and the stories they have, and they all get giddy. They all tell you it was one of the greatest experiences of their life. So, whatever. It's like you said, it's a different thing, and it's a different vibe of the people around them, and I just think a lot of them are getting bad advice too often.
There's your rant, the Jeff Shackelford rant we were waiting for.
There you go.
If you're an amateur and you're listening to this and you have a chance to win the U.S. Amateur or Latin America or the Mid-Am, for goodness sakes, stay in the Crow's Nest.
You know what? In fact, I'm going to fire off an email after this pod to Mike Clayton to ask if his buddy Lucas is the Mid-Am champ. He's going to do that, or he is somebody who might just stay in the Crow's Nest all week.
Fingers crossed. That's what I'm saying. I'm hoping that's the case. Jeff, I appreciate the time. You can obviously follow jeffshackelford.com. Read it. If you don't read jeffshackelford.com, you're doing it wrong. It's a mix of unbelievable, updated, topical golf news and cranky Jeff Shackelford writing. Those are two of my favorite things.
All right. Thanks, Shane. I appreciate the time, as always.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole! It's in the hole!
A big thanks to Jeff Shackelford for taking a lot of time. That was a lengthy, lengthy podcast, but I loved it. It was a great discussion, a great conversation. One of the best voices in all the golf is Jeff Shackelford. As I said as we were closing, if you don't read jeffshackelford.com consistently, you're really doing it wrong, because I just believe it's a great place to get true golf news with a little bit of opinion, but he doesn't throw his opinion all the way in there, which I think is nice. I mean, sometimes you want to go in there and just read what happened, pull out the meat of a quote, And you can click on the link from where it is. That's also a kind of a lost art, it seems like these days, is linking back to where the story originated. And he always does that. So a big thanks to Jeff. Hope you guys have a great week. Hope you guys enjoy the event. And check in on social. See how I played in the pre-qualifier. I think it's going to have to be somewhere in the 5-under range to have a chance to get into the Monday. But you never know. I played okay on Friday. I think I shot 4-under. I'm going to try to keep that same positive mentality going in. We'll check back with you next week.